Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, fellas.
And Ben Roy Turner.
The many are going to suffer for the sins of the Game Awards.
Now, we thought we'd gather together to break down the Video Game Awards nominations as of Mr. Jeff Keighley. Now, usually we're on the jury for this thing. We got to vote last year, but Big Jeff didn't get in touch, so don't worry about it. We'll do it ourselves. In the words of Carly Rae Jepsen, party for one. We'll just sort it out. Don't worry about it. We've got all the biggest nominations. We've got the things to talk about. And so we're just going to break down some of the most standout categories, and going forward, we'll likely revisit this stuff the closer we are to the show itself or when the actual awards start coming out. So going off the biggest talking point, game of the year. Now we're going to go off the initial reactions, gut reactions, because I've not been through that many of these categories, and we'll just see what conversations come out from this. So game of the year is between Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village. Josh Brown, gut reaction.
Incredibly different from what my top six would be for the year, I'll tell you that initially.
And there are some up there. Yeah.
Don't you start with this. There are some where's Mass Effect Legendary Edition? There is some interesting shots in there. I did not expect to see Ratchet and Clank in there. It Takes Two is very nice to see in there. But yeah, for me, I look at these and I think they're all very good games. And for me, I think I would go Resident Evil 8 Village out of the lot. But my big question is, boys, where's Returnal at? Where is Returnal, the actual game of the year? What's going on with that?
I'm gonna take that and go, where's the Forgotten City?
There's a few notable snubs,
but the Returnal is an obvious one that's missed out of a lot of these, and I know it's maybe because it's a sequel as well, but I don't think I've seen Hitman 3 in any of these categories.
I feel like with Hitman 3 it was like more of the same, like that was the best thing about it, and also the kind of most deflating thing about it was here's another level pack, like am I going to call it Hitman 3?
I don't know, man. It's still such a pristine game, though, you know what I mean? Especially considering when you take all of the... Hang on.
So was Tetris Effect connected, mate, but it's not...
My flow is just broken there, because I just heard you go, yeah, and I'm like, I want to interrogate that. What do you mean by, yeah?
Well, I thought Hitman 3 was quite disappointing. I thought they didn't pay off the story side of it at all, and like, it just was a collection of more levels, and even the last one was that weird like linear level that was fun in the moment, but it just, I've not replayed that at all. I finished Hitman 3 being thoroughly deflated by it. It just was I was really into the story they were setting up.
I'm gonna jump on this and jump be one of those people that like what I said with Resident Evil like a few months ago, is like that's more of a lore game. Hitman is more of a mechanics.
No, it is.
You're just doing a game. Like there were points where like It made for a good list. Is it Lucius Gray where he just got murked off? Like, sorry, mate. See you later. I feel like this was more of like a Standito game where it wasn't just a bunch of well-crafted maps, and it was like more levels of interconnecting, like pathways and stuff. You might have had that, but at the same time, I reckon it would be weird to fit that into a map and always have like a map with someone. I've said his name now, so spoilers. Lol, Lucius Gray dying. Like over and over again, if he was dying in like the corner of that map the whole time, then like it might break it. They could get around it, but it's just a weird one that Hitman 3 for me isn't on any categories, especially when listening to many people speaking about games throughout the year have all been like, oh my God, this is great. And I always personally thought it was the best one.
The thing is, I mean, yeah, it is. It's an incredible clockwork mechanism of a game, but so were the first two, but they also managed to have the story stuff alongside. They built a nice build up alongside that stuff. Like, that's what would have elevated it. I feel like could have been in the best narrative if they managed to pay that stuff off. But like you said, they've been off the one character that they're hinging a lot of stuff on. And then they kind of go, let's just make up the stuff. Or have the characters make up between Agent 47 and Diana. And just, I just thought that was extra stuff that they were building that would have been more worthwhile, that they just go, we're just going to do a DLC packs instead.
It kind of feels like for me, like that one year that the Two Towers didn't get nominated for best music because they were like, there's some of the music motifs in here from the old film, mate. But then Return of the King was. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, well, there's like all these motifs and things from the other Hitman games in there. But I feel like if it is that good, like some of these other games, like a Metroid, which I've not played, obviously it's Bloody Metroid and people want it Bloody Metroid and it's there. Like, it's a weird one to quantify. I feel like, is there a game of the year category? Is that another game of the year again, where it's just kind of like, if this was a great game the other year, but the sequel's kind of like the sequel of the year, maybe, who knows?
But I think it needs to have a notable uptick. I mean, Metroid is not just more Metroid. Like, they add to that the movement of it, the pace of it, the way it's structured, the boss structure stuff. Like, it's so much better and so much more than Metroid's been in two decades, really. Like, Metroid Dread will be my shout as number one, like it was since I finished it. And that will be mine. It Takes Two, I'm surprised to see. Like, I think that it's like, that is a really awesome thing. I guess they're hinging it on just how many things get done in co-op, the amount of little innovative ideas. Yeah, but I don't know a single human soul who's finished that game. Like, I don't think any of us have. Like, I mean, I've played through a lot of it. I feel like I'm 30 hours into the damn thing, but it's like, it just keeps going. Like, you think it's going to wrap up and then there's a whole other world to keep doing.
I think next week I might have it done. Like, I've just done a snowy world, and
okay,
the way it keeps progressing, there was a point where I'm around a tree at one point, and then I thought we've always been done, and then just keeps going, and he said going and going. But what amazes me is every area is new. It's not like, you just, like, the first few bits were like solid platform, and I was like, I just want a whole game of this. And then you get away from that, and it's more like you're shooting some things for a bit, and then you're doing some other co-op puzzles, and there's a lot of fast-paced sort of stuff like that. There's a playground bit at some point where it's like loads of child games are involved in it, and it made me have to do maths at one point. I was like, as I was sort of sloped in the sofa. But yeah, it's a weird one, because it's like, it's probably giving me my top 10 in a weird way.
Oh, yeah, it is,
but I don't think it's game of the year. I think that should have been Hitman 3 if I was gonna shout the clouds. Or the medium.
What about Resident Evil Village?
I mean, no, in that spot, Resident Evil Village is the game of the year, but in that spot of the lineup I can see, I would have maybe, you know, I would take out that, or even the Forgotten City. Who knows?
I'm glad to see It Takes Two. I think it represents a sheer pure level of creativity. I love what Joseph Farris is bringing to the industry. Mr. Josh Brown, what were you gonna say?
I was going to ask what you guys, you know, we've talked about what we want to win. We've talked about what we think should be in there. What do we think is going to win? Because for me, it's a toss-up between Deathloop and Metroid Dread. And I think, judging by the accolades that Deathloop already has won, that has to be the favorite, right? I mean,
I truly hope it is not Deathloop.
I hate that thing. It's not, I don't hate it. It's not my game of the year. I in the review, I give it 4 stars, which I stand by. But yeah, I feel like if that won, I'd kind of be like, cool.
I just don't. Yeah. I've said it before. I'm not going to go on a bit about it, but I don't get the love. I don't get what that game does well. I don't think it does anything well. I think it sucks. But that's where I'm at.
The way this is all weighted and like critics compared to the fan vote, it's good. Josh is right. It's going to be Metroid or Deathloop, and it just really depends how many people the way Deathloop was awarded those billions of tens depends if people have waned on it since, because it feels like a very in the moment game. And after a lot of people get towards the end, it's kind of like, well, there's some fun revelations, but it kind of
really go anywhere.
It goes against exactly its whole identity of what it was meant to be. And it's like, I feel it very funneled. Starting Deathloop, I was like, oh yes. And towards the end, I'm like, well,
that was my thing. It was just that realization of like, it's bells and whistles, the game. Like, I'm leaping into a map. I'm going to one place. I'm doing one thing. And it's trying to convince me that my actions have a lot of more causality than they actually do. And over time, that just got really annoying. But
not what I want from Arkane.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Not what I want from Arkane. I think Psychonauts 2, I think, might actually grab it. Like, I just feel like that game, if you're talking about games that have through line of pure creativity, zero business mandates, zero studio interference, absolutely one creative mind writ large, that's what It Takes Two has in it going in its favor. And Psychonauts 2 has that across the board. I just feel like because it's the Psychonauts IP, I don't feel like Xbox did a great job of marketing it that much. Like, when it was finally ready to come out, they were just like, yeah, it's on Game Pass alongside everything else. Whereas it does have a feeling of, you know, an auteur, a Tim Schafer, like, putting his all into it. And it's like 10 years in development or something insane. Yeah. And it's been like 13, 14 years since the last one. Part of me feels like some critics would actually go, yeah, it's actually that. Which, I don't know.
I don't think it is going to be if we could see how many actually people have, I think it wouldn't be above like a Resident Evil. I think your top two are Deathloop and Metroid, and then if you can go Resident Evil, and then below that, it's just a puddle of despair.
I think Psychonauts might be the one where fans are really behind it. You know, fans absolutely love that game, and you know, it's scored really well critically as well. But when I jumped into it, I can only speak from my own personal experience. You know, I was not a huge fan of Psychonauts 1. Like, I don't have many ties to that game outside of, you know, knowing it as a cult success and wanting it to finally be successful. But going into the sequel, playing it for 2 hours, it was just something that I, even though I quite liked conceptually and what they were doing, and it felt really good, I just sort of bounced straight off it. Like, I had 2 hours in there and it didn't grab me, and maybe I was in a bad mood or something when I tried it, but I tried it over a couple of nights, two nights playing an hour each, and it just didn't do it for me. And I'm wondering whether it's a me problem and if it's just not my cup of tea, or whether I need to sit down and when things are a bit clearer and give it a proper go.
I didn't finish it. Jules like absolutely tore like a bite out of it. Like, he did nothing other than play that game when it came out, and then the only thing that put me off was the story stuff. I didn't like that they reset you after you worked so hard to become a psycho cadet, psychonaut across the first game, and then this one was, we're gonna reset you again and work your way back up and stuff, and I just didn't like that. But the writing, the art style, like, I think there is there's a through-line creative spirit to it that isn't in that many games. And I wonder if, like, you know, when it comes down to putting the name on the ballot paper kind of thing, whether people actually go, maybe it's Psychonauts 2. And I just imagine Tim Schafer getting Game of the Year. Like, I don't think he's ever got that. Or if he has, it's been a long time. So maybe. But yeah, Game of the Year, I think considering the year it's been, it's still quite a solid selection of titles. And we should quickly touch on Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. Josh, you said, I think you were surprised that was in.
Well, kind of surprised and also not surprised, because, you know, it's a lovingly crafted game that is a total crowd pleaser. It's a lovely showcase for the PS5. Just for me personally, it's not an incredible game. It's a great game, and, you know, that's awesome and still worth celebrating. But when I think of Game of the Year, I think of the games that totally elevated, you know, the medium, or did something intriguing or special. And for me, Ratchet and Clank was a very good Ratchet and Clank. And like I said, that's good and fine. And it's really, really appealing, and I still enjoyed my time with it. But when it comes to conversations about Game of the Year and what was left out and what that maybe replaced, it's just kind of like, okay, I see why it's there, but it wouldn't be my pick.
It's always like, what does it bring to the table, that extra little thing, that nebulous thing that gives it the 5 stars, which I ended up giving it 5 stars because I think it is such a meticulously crafted game. And I did love the story, and I love the way that the worlds are laid out, the DualSense stuff. It was this sort of, look what a PS5 can do kind of thing, in a way that I kind of wanted Returnal to be more of. But like I said, I'll be very amazed if it wins. I think it is one of the games of the year. It was definitely my game of the year after I played through. I was just like, this is the most I've been wowed consistently until Metroid Dread. But we'll see what happens going forward. Next category is Best Indie Game. 12 Minutes, Death's Door, Kena Bridge of Spirits, Inscription, and Loop Hero.
We had a brief conversation about this before we started recording. Kena. Well, this is the thing, right? I'm not even going to jump into the actual nominations. I'm going to talk about the biggest snub, in my opinion, because I don't understand why Sable isn't on there, but 12 minutes is? Like, 12 minutes? We did a whole podcast. We did a few videos on it. You know, we all enjoyed it to varying different degrees, but that game is like, it's mad
as abomination. Yeah.
It doesn't come together properly. It's almost good in spite of its flaws. Like, I don't think that's a game that is deserving of a big award like this. It's fun, it's all right, but it's a complete mess.
And no one has that on Forgotten here, City and yeah, exactly. Sable, like you said, yeah.
Those two games in particular stand out as being more deserving. And it's funny that those two games are on the best debut indie, because I think almost it should have been swapped around. Like, I feel like Forgotten City and Sable deserve to be considered as two of the best indies of the year. And it kind of feels like they've got this consolation prize at the moment.
I don't know what that category means. Like, I mean, I guess if he'd sent the little ballot papers over, maybe we could have figured it out. But I have no idea what indie game versus debut indie game means. Like, they're all debuts if it's the year that it came out. Disco Elysium getting completely overlooked in regards to the console space, which I guess was always a back and forth whether that was going to qualify.
It's not this year game, that's why.
It might be, but Cyberpunk 2077 also qualifying for the best RPG, so it goes back and forward. But Mr. Benroy, thoughts on the best indie game?
Well, I would have liked to play Inscription, but I don't have a personal computer per se. I have a Macintosh like a chump. Mm-hmm. So, but I feel like that too from hearing a bunch of that, I feel like that's one of the games that might take it, hearing how that game goes. And some of it's like, it's more than just a card game. And I wouldn't spot it for anyone. I feel like you should either check out a review on it or just go in, because I was like, oh, when I've heard two trusted sources podcasts that I like just gush about this thing, I was like, oh, I need to go in there. But that's secondhand smoke. Let's go to some firsthand smoke and go, where the hell is the Forgotten Sea?
It's not a debut either.
It's one of the indiest of all the indie games. I know. I feel like it. But 12 minutes. I feel like that's on there because more people just play 12 minutes, and it's just one of the only ones they could remember if I'm gonna shoot my shot here. But yeah, I just think I can't muster my power.
Yes.
To talk about it when the Forgotten City just doesn't appear.
I think Forgotten City is going to be the thing that people talk about, especially after the awards, because the more people will pick it up. Again, that game, though, like, marketing was barely there. Like, I mean, I didn't even know what it was until Josh mentioned it. I think that's also why you picked it up, Benroy, but I could be wrong. But I feel like it took...
I thought he was talking about the Sinking City for about 3 months.
Right, yeah, exactly. And I feel like... I think I got those wrong in a DM, like, every single time we talked about it for, like, months on end. But yeah, I feel like they could have done a much better job of championing the fact that a small team of people took... They took a Skyrim style engine and built their own thing, and it feels like Skyrim DLC ostensibly in terms of how it moves and everything, but there's so much going on in regards to the time loop stuff. They could have got in on that, the amount of time loop games earlier this year. You could have done that.
Yeah,
it just feels like such a missed opportunity.
It's funny what something like 12 minutes gets in best indie game, and it absolutely is independent, you know. I'm not saying anything against that, but it's an independent game with a lot of money and a lot of marketing behind it. You know, you've got these huge stars in the lead role. It was years and years in development, presumably had a lot of money thrown behind it by Microsoft in particular when it was announced as an exclusive, you know, a lot of marketing for it. And it's just kind of like, I'm not saying that that makes it less deserving, but when you've got like these other games that are kind of under the radar more and have kind of literally more independent. Succeeded through word of mouth without these big publishers backing them up. To me, that's kind of like, those are games you might not want to necessarily give it the award or anything, but those are games to champion, especially when we're talking about indie games in the indie space.
Mundawn should be on there above 12 minutes. Like, no one's ever going to mention Mundawn out of like maybe this conversation here. But yeah, even that weird twisted thing that I'm yet to finish but still going through, like, I don't know,
like they added an extra category. They had debut indie game, and then I'm lovely seeing Sable there. That's also that would be my top three, my top five. But to get back to the stuff that is on there, Death's Door, a really brilliant, very Zelda inspired top down dungeon crawler, action adventure type thing. I love my time with Death's Door, but it is very Zelda. Like, you're even unlocking stuff like the hookshot. You're getting bombs so you can blow away parts of the environment. It is just very Zelda. Even though it does play very well, the combat's very tight, and it looks gorgeous on Series X or Series S, well, the HDR stuff. Kena Bridge of Spirits would just be mine, though. I love the fact that an animation studio who were known for one fan film took that level of artistic direction and applied a gameplay system that it plays so well. It plays as tightly as something like Horizon, and I feel like the gameplay side of it didn't really get its due because the graphics are so alluring, the art direction is so alluring, but I feel like that game just should be played by a lot more people. It's very much a throwback to the Jak and Daxter era. It's a very mid-2000s platformer, which a lot of people were like, oh my god, it's a PS2 platformer. And I'm like, yeah, that's one of the best things about it. Like, what, you don't want to be reminded of one of the best times in gaming history? Like, for me, that's one of the the biggest positives to it, but I get why people might want it to be a bit more modernized. But still, I think Kena Bridge of Spirits, I hope Kena Bridge of Spirits gets its due, and hopefully that wins, for me anyway. Do you guys have a number one pick out of this set?
I have forgotten what the nominations were again. Could you repeat them all for me, please?
I can. It was 12 Minutes, Bomb, Death's Door, Kena Bridge of Spirits, Inscription, and Loop Hero.
Interesting. See, there's a lot of those I still have to get to. You know, like the bottom three, I still need to give a go. So I'm going to abstain from this at this moment in time.
That's fair enough. Ben Roy, you're a massive Kena Bridge of Spirits fan. How can you contain yourself?
I've voted for The Forgotten Sea.
Crowbarring it in. Next category is a Best Game Direction. Deathloop, It Takes Two, Returnal, Psychonauts 2, and Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. Now, I think this should go to Returnal.
Ooh, I think this is a good category, you know. I would love to see it go to Returnal, but I think it might go to It Takes Two for the reasons Ben Roy mentioned previously, just in terms of the focus on the co-op mechanics alongside the variety on display. You know, like Ben Roy said, you're going from world to world. Each world has a new gimmick, but the gimmick's done really well. It's just, for me, when I think about that, or at least, you know, the half of it that I've played, because I've still yet to finish the second half, at least from so far, and from what I've seen and from what I've seen people talk about, it just feels so cohesive, and it has a sense of direction.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A lot of the other games in that list obviously have, but there's something there, and Joseph Farris is such a good personality to get behind. Yes. And he always leaves a distinct imprint on his games. That's always different, you know, whether it's Brothers, whether it's Way Out, whether it's now this. There are similar themes throughout, but each one is new, and each one has this cohesive vision driving them throughout.
I feel like it might be down to the way that they define game direction. Like, I feel like it's how much of a specific creator comes through in a game, and how much is there like that through line sort of, like I said, auteur spirit throughout it kind of thing. Because I feel like Deathloop has a really defined direction to it. The art style, the soundtrack, the way the script is written, it is very identifiable. Those are the best qualities of it. The reason I would give it to Returnal is just because it has that really great, suffocating atmosphere to it that I feel like you could pause any frame of that game and you would know it was Returnal. Like the squid-like creatures, the way the environments are done, that sort of dank like approach to like almost like horror infused action stuff, I just think that'd be really cool. Yeah. But also Psychonauts 2, Tim Schafer is throughout that game, and there's so much of his mind just writ large in that game. Ben Roy, where do you come down?
I played 6 hours straight of It Takes Two on Monday when I was off,
yes,
with a friend, and I feel like we played five different games, and compare that to a Way Out that we played, replayed just before
It Takes
this.
Two? Okay,
yeah, like a month or two ago, and how that game is like gone in like a second compared to this. And in that game, oh, you play some Kinect 4, and this one, you're going through, and you can do little mini games like Total War, but at the same time, there's so many like aspects to this, and so like much like your character is fighting goo, and you're like blowing up the goo, or there's some other powers that you're lifting things up, and you're reversing time, and you're flying around, and and all these worlds and art, like everything. I feel like from a art side, I feel like from the cutscenes where these characters are both sort of like battling off against each other, that weird book lad that appears and goes, "Oh, hello," and I'm just like,
"I love that guy."
I'm just like, "Get out! Don't touch me, you weirdo!" I feel like It Takes Two has blown me away by how weird and different it is this year. And I feel like it just needs to win something somewhere like high up. And I feel like best game direction, even though I love Returnal, I feel like best, and that's going to be higher up on my personal list. I feel like It Takes Two is, I think, Joseph Farris, like sort of like he's fully funked the Oscars. The Oscars are finally funked, and he's out there, and he's like now ascended to a new level with this one.
I would love that if he wins after seeing those things about the Oscars back in whatever year that was. I don't know if I might actually rescind my pick after what I said and just go with Psychonauts 2, because I feel like that game is just dripping in Tim Schafer. And if you're literally going best game direction, you think of the Kojimas, you think of the Ken Levines, you think of the auteurs of gaming. There's something closer to that with Psychonauts 2 than maybe the rest of them. I feel like It Takes Two, though, is like the most game. Like, it's like, here's every single genre, every single mechanic we can do, and we do it incredibly well.
From like little children's toy sets to scary worlds, and it being Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I thought it was going to be a whole Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing, and that's like an eighth of the game. It's mad.
I think that the first time it becomes like a third-person shooter when you're going up against the wasps, and it becomes this like army thing. And all the space levels and stuff. It's just, I mean, Farris said it was going to go places, but I feel like considering that it's EA publishing it, the amount of money that it costs to make these worlds and make it play this well, it just feels like this insane anomaly. Next category is Best Narrative. Deathloop, It Takes Two, Life is Strange, True Colors, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, or Psychonauts 2. Hilariously, it might be Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know.
Interesting.
I voted It Takes Two for this one.
Well, I really don't know, because I feel like I want to play Life is Strange. That's the only game here that I've not like touched at all. And that's just got like rave reviews, especially for its story. Like, that series has never done it for me in the past, but True Colors seems like it's, you know, something else. So I definitely want to check that out before, hopefully before the end of the year.
That feels like the only game where story is like the focus, is what you would play it for, the story. You would play it for the narrative. Like, the rest of them, they back stuff up. But a lot of these are gameplay first games.
I would say you go into It Takes Two. I'm just gonna jump in and shout over you, because It Takes Two to shout. No, but I feel like you go into It Takes Two for this weird multiplayer thing, and then the depth of these two characters sort of like being sort of like forced, like, I mean, like in a weird way, to sort of like get on, and just like how I wish I played it with like another half rather than just like a friend, because it feels like these two people, and like this is naturally them. I mean, it's a weird, horrible state they've been put in by this demon book lad, but how they're coming together, and they're sort of like, they're, even the way these two characters, the two actors, are coming together and sort of like changing how they speak, and they might have sort of a few jabs at each other, but I can't wait to see how this thing ends. I put Best Narrative before I finished it. Yeah, shoot me, but I'll have it finished before the voting closes, I think, soon. But just how it comes together so far, how it has, I can't believe it's done this to me, this game.
I think for me, because it's so banter, because everything is so... I like love the way it's written. I really like Joseph Farris's writing anyway, but I think that it is so like funny, and they're going for it to be really charming. I didn't really get much of a weight behind it, even though the subject matter is about parents splitting up and divorce and the kid wanting them to get back together. So I'm very curious how it ends, considering it depends whether, like, you know, you should stay together for the sake of the child, or whether it is better for two individual human adults to actually just be healthier apart. I'm curious where that goes. That might be the thing that elevates it overall. I know that a lot of people do love the story of It Takes Two. But yeah, Josh, where are you coming down in regards to this whole category?
I don't know, because it's the first time in a lot of years where this category doesn't have the one standout narrative that affected me on a deep, deep level. Like, I can appreciate them all. And out of the ones that I've played, again, maybe Life is Strange will be the one for me when it comes to what I'm wanting. But it's maybe Deathloop, because while I don't think it has a cracking ending, the story of Deathloop I was always invested in. I think the way the mythology of that game is told through your jibes between, you know, the two main characters or things that you found in the world, there was a lot there for me to chew on. I enjoyed the writing and I enjoyed the relationships in there. So for me, I'm kind of leaning towards that, though it's a beatable one.
I think for me, Guardians is like surprisingly, Guardians is surprisingly weighty. It's like the kind of sentence that you wouldn't like think to say ahead of time, but I think it opens really strong. They really do a great job like rounding out Star-Lord as a character. You see him as a teenager, you know what makes him tick. And I feel like they do a whole thing with the Guardians where like the banter, the crazy stuff is like very much an act. It's like hiding really scarred individuals underneath. And the movies did bits of that stuff. And some of the scenes in the game can be a bit jarring, going from like really over the top stuff to, you know, suddenly there's like a piano bit underneath the character talking about their horrible past or whatever. But because you can just explore the ship and talk to Gamora or whoever whenever you want, it is like Deus Ex, it is like Mass Effect, where you can just sit and have an actual 20-25 minute conversation with someone and really pick apart their character, which I think works in their favor. So I guess if it's best narrative in regards to a wider world and wider stuff as opposed to like literal story beats, then I could see the case for Guardians potentially.
Do you join forces of a broken hammer that you betrayed years ago, and then do you also take up a big beetle and trick him with some nectar only to lob him off the edge of a cliff and then beat up a bumblebee because they're getting involved, saying you want to get involved?
That's
in
the high That's bar. Or trick a Hoover so it sucks up the wrong thing. But to be fair,
its
those...
own face. Oh, as I just...
Those boss battles are the boss battles of the year. Like, it's not even that close, really. Kena's got some good Dark Souls-adjacent stuff, but the things you have to do, especially for two separate people, to coordinate, to beat things in it takes two, does elevate it. Next category from his best performance. Erica Mori as Alex Chen from Life is Strange, Giancarlo Esposito as Anton Castillo from Far Cry 6, Jason E. Kelly as Colt Vaughn from Deathloop, Ozioma Akaga as Juliana Blake from Deathloop, or Maggie Robertson as Lady Dimitrescu in Resident Evil Village.
Ooh,
I know.
I can't choose between the two Deathloop people for me, because for me, it definitely is Deathloop, even though there's a lot of competition there. But for me, their performances, they're so in sync, and you can separate them, of course, but they work together as a dynamic, as a relationship. And that was the first thing about Deathloop that got me excited about it. The first time I booted it up, their first interaction, the performances of Colt, like immediately putting you in his headspace, how he was kind of approaching this, you know, traumatic thing with a level of humor, with a level of humanity, with a level of pathos. It was just that extra element I needed to immediately get me in. And that, even though the other performances were great, hasn't happened in the other games where it's been immediately apparent, like the driving force of the whole thing, in the same way that it was for Deathloop. So I can't pick them apart, but I think one of them has to win.
That they're nominated separately, because they're so equal in that game. Like, there's so much of either of them in that game. Benroy, what are your thoughts?
I would say if we're just going for the Deathloop, I would say Jason for me. There's just so much more cult in there. Like, obviously you get your cult for most of the game apart from the other mode, and like the interaction of everything, all the characters, all like the one-liners. I can't believe how amazing Jason is in this, and I want more media with him and his voice. Give me a Mass Effect style game with just me being Jason for the entire 100 hours sort of thing. I just want dialogue to fall out of his face and just go into my ears. Even saying that, I voted my boy Giancarlo Esposito, because that's the reason I bought Far Cry 6. God. And he is excellent, and he has set a new bar for the Far Cry villain, even though
he's fallen away to nothing. He's not setting
if you had seen all the scenes, you would know, but I mean... he's a lot more of the same, but with a different sort of tint, because I've never seen the Giancarlo Esposito villain, which is his own genre, have a child, and the way like he interacts with the child, and like how that doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. Like you think it's definitely going to do this thing. And then there's like, say, a few 180s over the course, which I don't think are just like, look, it's shock factor, but you could easily just reduce this down to, well, we've seen him be Gus. We've seen him be, can't remember his name in Star Wars right now. And then Jason just wins because Jason
Moff
is phenomenal.
Moff Gideon, I think.
Moff Gideon, yes, that was it. But it's between Giancarlo and Jason Kelly for me.
Mm-hmm. I think, the thing is, like, when they got Giancarlo Esposito, it felt like it was, okay, they're literally getting him to do his villain shtick, which, like, there's not even that much between Gus Fring and Moff Gideon. And it, for me, like I said, I'm only like halfway through, if that, probably even a third, if that, of Far Cry 6. And the scenes that I've seen with him in have been that archetypal casting kind of thing.
I think it benefits from it not being, I'm in your face and let's have a kiss, the way that all the other Far Cry sort of cutscenes have been, where the villain is all locked first person. I like how it's broken out and you get your own scenes. But as I said, again, you can be like, there's definitely merit in being reductive and saying, well, he's been this character before. But I think the sort of extra flavor they've added with a son on here, and you find out the reasons why he's doing this and where he's going with all of this. I mean, like, still evil man at the end. But again, for me, the biggest surprise is Jason as Colt.
I think it'll be between, I think one of them definitely will take it. Maggie Robertson as Lady Dimitrescu, I feel like if she was in more of the game, maybe she'd get more of a chance to shine. I feel like it's almost like a meme cast, like a meme nomination. Like, I feel like she was a dominative part of this year's voice roles and stuff, or characters this year. But I was a bit let down by how much Lady Dimitrescu wasn't in more of Resident Evil Village. I wish there was more of her. But yes, final category is most anticipated game. Elden Ring, God of War, Ragnarok, Horizon Forbidden West, the sequel to The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. I guess they're not calling it Breath of the Wild 2 anymore. Or Starfield.
Oh my God. Oh man, I just want to say, right, next year, if all of these games drop and everything else that's scheduled, we're going to be eaten well, is all I'm saying. We're going to have a lot of stuff to sink our teeth into. For me, this is incredibly tough, and I think, based on what I've seen so far, and I know you're not going to like this, Scott Tilford, it's Elden Ring. It's Elden Ring for me. That's my most anticipated one. God of War Ragnarok, I'm of course looking forward to. Love the 2018 version, but I almost know what I'm getting with that. I kind of already have my expectations for it and stuff. Elden Ring for me, I feel like, is going to be the one that's full of surprises out of this selection.
That's fair. I think the stuff that I've seen with Elden Ring, like, it looks solid enough, but if you called it Dark Souls 4, it would make infinitely more sense to me. Like, it just, I don't know, I was a bit underwhelmed by the gameplay stuff, but not to get too harsh on it. Ben Roy, what's your most anticipated game?
I'm getting the poison chalice here again.
It's Elden Ring.
I want to believe in Todd Howard.
Right.
I want to believe in Todd. So I'm going with Todd Field here, and I hope that he can take me on his galactic sandwich quest, and I hope that with now blinders on him, I can imagine Phil putting some horse blinders on him, so now he's focused on getting that sandwich out the door. Hopefully that we can get Starfield and it's not a broken,
I
hope it's not the sequel to Cyberpunk where it's destroyed, which was the sequel to Fallout 4. I want to believe too.
I that's what I was going to ask. Do both you guys think, just gut feeling, will Starfield perform really well at launch? I mean, literal performance. Will the frame rate be solid? Will the resolution be solid? Will the bugs not be omnipresent?
It's not going to be a Fallout 76. I do have confidence in that. It's not going to be a Cyberpunk, but it's also not going to be pristine, man. This is the test at the end of the day. It's going to have some issues. Like, I don't think they'll be game-breaking. They better not be game-breaking. They can't do that again. They can't afford to make that mistake again. But at the very, you know, least, there's going to be some daft bugs doing the rounds on Twitter.
Because they said it is the creation engine again. It's not new tech. Yeah. So it is another, it's going to feel like the old stuff again, to some, unless they've managed to completely overhaul it. But I like Ben Rose. Hopefully that works.
If it's going to be as broken as you think it would be, I think it would then be pushed a year. Like, I think we've seen with Halo getting pushed. I feel like now Bethesda are in that sort of Microsoft sort of like family where Phil checks up on you every, like, I'm going to imagine every half an hour. Like, hey, what's going on now?
What are you coding, sort of thing.
What are you coding? What are you working on, man? I just want to believe that Starfield will be, it's not good. I don't think it's going to be the second coming of video game Jesus, like that some people think
it's
it might
time
be
Bethesda
for Bethesda.
Had a win, though. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to, you know, like how The Outer Worlds was like, we can still have this game and it's still pretty good, but we want a bit more out of it. Mm-hmm. I feel like that might be I imagine this is going to be a much meatier Outer Worlds that I'm guessing from being reductive, thinking of the games in my head.
I'm largely with you. I think I have zero faith in Bethesda. So I'm just kind of like, I'm just hoping that they do something well. It's been a long time since the first Skyrim. My shout would just be Breath of the Wild 2. I'm just curious what happens with that game. Because they've never sequelized a Zelda before. Like, I mean, you've got like little spin-offs of stuff. There's Majora's Mask is like Ocarina, like a weird ROM hack of Ocarina, but they've never done a direct sequel to something before. So I'm just curious what that is. The fact that it's listed here as sequel to Breath of the Wild makes me think that maybe it's become its own Zelda entirely. Because it is some big jump in the future anyway. So I don't know, but I just hope that Nintendo continue to do fun stuff with that franchise.
Is it on that same map?
No, well, it's like it'll be like a sky map. It's going to be more like Skyward Sword, like it was Hyrule Castle takes off in the initial teaser, and now everything's up in the sky. So I don't know what size land masses are up in the sky, but it's shown Link going from place to place. So it seems like it's a bit like Skyward Sword.
The reason I didn't mention the Zelda sequel is that it's the one game on that list that I don't think is going to make next year. I feel like Starfield will probably slip in there just because they have the date, you know, actually revealed. But when it comes to Zelda, it's just 2022 and we haven't seen much. It doesn't have a title. They need to do a lot within that year. And, you know, I might be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong because I will bloody play the pants off it. But if there's one game out of this selection that will slip for me, it's Zelda.
I'm curious how it goes. I think they already delayed it quite a lot anyway. And Zelda, they always have a 2-year turnaround. Like they've changed up a little bit sometimes with like remake-y stuff, like the Link's Awakening remake. But for the most part, they've hit like I'm sure it's nearly always been a 2-year turnaround for their main games. There's always been some sort of main game dropping then. So hopefully, but either way, 2022 is absolutely stacked. It's ridiculous. None of us actually mentioned God of War Ragnarok, which is quite interesting considering how much of an impact that thing had. I feel like that... That game changing from Corey Barlog to Other Man has made me a bit wary. I forget who
I
Other
think it's because we know what that we don't know. It's by looking at those games, what Sony have shown, it's very sort of like, okay, these are more of this, and it's kind of not like the next thing is as an Elden Ring can potentially be as a sequel to the Breath of the Wild in the clouds would be, and as mysterious as Starfield could be, because Starfield could be just totally just broken. So I can't but with those others, you feel like they're going to come out, they're going to be 8 to 10s, and they're going to be fantastic.
Hopefully everything lines up, and also we'll know who has won all of these categories in another month or so. I think the Game Awards are on the 8th of December, I believe, maybe the 6th. Is it the start of December ish it's in December, but we'll check back in, we'll do some sort of the podcast follow-up thing once we know who's actually won, and hopefully Returnal gets some sort of awards across the showcase. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Ben Roy Turner.
You're all still gonna suffer for not putting Forgotten City on there.
All go play Metroid Dread, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.